I'm Krish Sankar from BofA Merrill Lynch. The next company presenting is Applied Materials, and you're fortunate enough to have Mr. Bob Halliday, the CFO, present. He's going to talk for a little bit, and then we're going to have a fireside chat, open it up for Q&A. With that, I'll let Bob take over. Bob?
Thanks, Krish. For those in the audience, you have to be on this side of the bright light, sitting on the white leather chair, to really enjoy this environment. I think you should retrofit the stage with the David Letterman.
I heard they were going to trash it, right?
I started on the sidewalk, yeah. So let me talk about something useful. Talk a little bit about the industry, a little bit about Applied, just to kick it off, right? The industry is in pretty good shape. We mostly compete in the semiconductor capital equipment industry and display equipment. If you go look at it, I think the new normal in our industry tends to be not as cyclical, reasonable growth, and sort of the new normal cross-cycle number is a bigger number. We used to use modeling of about $30 billion in WFE across the cycle. Now we're sort of in the $33.5 billion. This year, we're sort of nominally saying it's a $30 billion environment, but if you look at the devaluation of some of the currencies, euro and yen, and you kept it constant dollars, it's probably closer to 34. So that means in 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, line of sight to 16. Overall, industry environment is pretty healthy, and if you look at an industry like that, and you optimize your cost structures and try and increase your reduce your tax rate and increase your cash flow, you can create a pretty sustainably good business. So I'd say the environment's pretty good. Display business, just quickly, you guys don't follow display probably as much. We sell equipment to make displays. For years, that equipment was sold to make TV displays. Now, the growth of making displays for your cell phone and iPads are growing substantively. The industry historically was super cyclical because they'd make a couple of big TV factories and then go dormant for a year or two. Given that it is, now they're making small displays also, a little less cyclical, but still probably more cyclical than the market for semiconductor capital equipment, believe it or not. Next year, we'll probably be over 50% of our sales could be for small displays. So both industries are going through changes, which are generally good for us. Overall demand, as I said, is pretty good. The demand mix is changing more to companies like Applied, and our share within that mix has been pretty good. So overall, industry dynamics are okay. Within Applied, we're trying to do three things: grow the revenue at above normal, above industry normal levels, and we've been successful at that. Two, we're trying to increase the operating margins. We've been reasonably successful at that. We're a little bit behind, a point or two behind on that. And then three, we're trying to increase the cash returns to investors, and we could talk about that also. So I think we're doing a three-track plan, which is going okay. We tried to accelerate that plan with our merger with Tokyo Electron. Unfortunately, the Department of Justice thought our products were too good and too disruptive to let us go together. So that merger has been stopped.
So, you know, just following up on that, Bob, so it's been a couple of months, so you've probably come to peace with yourself after the breakup of the merger. You know, when you look at it, and, like, you know, obviously most investors want to know how you can grow your earnings and your op margin. You know, I mean, these things are always very challenging. There's a lot of execution involved. But is it as simple as it sounds, that there are a few easy levers, low-hanging fruit to do, or you had to make some difficult decisions, either in terms of exiting product lines or, like, drastically, like, cutting, like, you know, in one division? Like, what are the levers to get to a pretty high op margin from here?
You know, that's a great question. I'll give you one of the lecture series I give internally to the company. I do these lecture series to everybody. So if you want to optimize, Applied is a portfolio of different products and businesses. We arguably have 40 different products and maybe 10 different businesses, because you have several significant businesses over $1 billion in the semiconductor capital equipment business. So if you want to optimize that financial model, the first thing you do is get more efficient on all the things that support the products. So efficiency, who supports all those 40 products? G&A things: finance, HR, legal, IT, manufacturing, supply chain, and some of the field organization. So drive efficiency there. We've done a pretty good job there. We got 30% in a year and a half. This is a tough thing to do. We got a 30% reduction in G&A cost. You can see it on the face of the P&L. And that was a big cut. That saved us almost $200 million, right? So then the other efficiency which we're trying to pursue is within supply chain, manufacturing, things like that, and also the field a little bit. Now the field efficiency, we didn't really get into that too hard for a couple of reasons. We were going to merge with Tokyo Electron, put the two field organizations together. But first, scale efficiency. And then on top of those infrastructure things, you got your products. There's three tricks of the trades on the products. One, get more effective at bringing new products to market. And there's processes across that. New product development process, supplier selection process, value negotiation process, right? We're getting a little better at that. The second trick of the trade, which you're talking about, is portfolio management. Totem pole your projects. And the ones that are underperforming, you invest less or divest. The ones that are overperforming, you invest more. That sounds simple. Frankly, you guys do it every day, right? You buy stocks you like and you sell ones you don't like. It's a little more complicated in companies because people get emotionally attached to products or people or markets. We're not too emotional on this stuff. We say, hey, totem pole, let's do it. So when we came in, the solar market was a tough market. So we cut about $170 million of losses out of there. And we sold the inventory and got the cash. So we did it like a workout. But right now it's still a tough market, so we probably have to keep another look at that. So the short answer to your question is you're right. In a 40-plus product company, you've got to kind of relentlessly every quarter go through execution on the infrastructure and totem pulling the projects. That's yeah. what we have to do.
And, you know, you kind of touched upon a few of those, like including like supply chain, you know, G&A, field efficiency. So, you know, when you look at it, you're probably running at like 21% or so op margin. The goal is, I don't know, like 24, 25% to get there. Is it, you know, if I look at your targets from 2 years ago, which I'm sure you're going to update next month at the Analyst Day, you guys have done a pretty good job on the revenue top line side. You gained share even though the whole like Tokyo Electron merger thing was going on. And so it really looks like even if you can get your gross margin up a couple of hundred basis points, you're almost pretty close to your op margin goal. So is that an easier path, or is it more on the OPEX side the easier path to get to?
Yeah, let me see if I cascade down the P&L. Right? Yeah. So the base year for our model was 2012, and we came in 2013, right? Right. So if you look at revenue, which is pretty hard to do, there's three ways, this always confuses investors, there's three ways you can look at your share of market, right? First is where we live, our served addressable market, how much is the customer spending in places we compete? That's actually gone up the last 3 or 4 years in a row. I guess it went from like 53 or 4 to 58%. That's pretty positive. For years it was going kind of down, right? So where we compete has actually gone up from 2012 to 2015. The second thing is, well, how much of the customer's total pocketbook do you capture? So in 2012, Applied Materials had 17.6% of the new equipment plus 0.2% of the 200 millimeter equipment. So our total share of the investor's customer's pocketbook was 17.8% in 2012. Last year in 2014, it was 18.8 plus 0.3, 19.1. So of the total pocketbook of our customers, we went from 17.8 to 19.1. That's pretty good in our industry, right? And what they were spending was going up in our type of direction. The second thing is our service business. Our service business got down to $2 billion in revenue in 2013. 2014, it was 2.2, up 10%. And this year, we think we could break 2.6. So the service business is growing. And for years, it was not growing. Our display business in 2012, I think it was about $400 million or something like that. And we think we could get close to $800 million exiting this year into next year run rate. So that's almost double. So the revenue growth's actually done okay. Now, where we haven't done okay is the solar business. We weren't bullish on solar. It was 250, 270 in 2012. We thought get to 400. It's not happening. The market's not there. You say, gee, I read about solar getting better. But that's the end demand for solar power. We make the equipment that adds capacity to make more solar power. So the equipment that adds capacity, there's still excess manufacturing capacity of solar panels in the world. So that market does look great. So we're going to miss the revenue line there. The only good news is we had that in our financial model, very low margin.
Right.
So in revenues, as you said, Chris, we're doing okay, actually, and that's pretty tricky. Gross margins, the base year was 40.9% gross margins for the company, 2012. We got up to 42.1 in 2013. We got up to 44.1 in 2014. Our goal for 2016 was 44.5, so we were sort of 80-plus percent of the way there. This year we're down. We're 43 and change. Why are we down after going up for a couple of years? Mix has gone against us this year. You know, we've actually gained more share than we thought in etch, and the gross margins in etch are lower than our average semi margins. So the question is, will they come back? I think etch gross margins will get better. Our others will get better. But the percentage of mix I'm a little worried about, particularly in the first half of next year. So my point is, gross margins will probably get better in the second half. I'm a little worried about mixing the first half to 16. I think year on year we might be okay. I think the trend will be up, but I don't know if we'll get to 44.5 next year because of the mix issues. And display's got a little bit of bad mix at the beginning of next year because these smaller screen sizes, our margins are a little less. So what's the point? Gross margins will probably improve. They are a lever, but it's going to be gradual, I think, because of the mix issues. And then expenses were a little over. We're starting to cut back down. And then the good news is, you know, the tax rate's done okay. We said we'd get to 22. We're exiting the year at 19% tax rate. We'll probably do a little better. And the EPS is impacted by the weighted average share outstanding, which we will reduce because we are going to do a $3 billion buyback over 2 years.
Right. Got it. And then, I mean, along the path, you know, if you just focus on the op margin line, and this is more like spreadsheet math, so it's easy to do on Excel versus in reality, but, you know, I totally agree on the solar side, and it looks like you guys have cut a lot of expense on the solar side already. So even if you punt solar, you're probably going to save like $20-30 million at the most on an annualized basis. But if I just like remove display from the equation, the margin profile looks really much better. So the bigger question is, to the extent you can answer it, does display still make, does it still a strategic fit for the company or not?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One is, I think solar is actually a little bigger opportunity than that because there's different businesses in there. So if you look at the underperforming business, they're underperforming by more than the $20 million. So I think the opportunity is a little bigger in there. In terms of display, display has actually become a more attractive business for us. The problem in that business is kind of two problems. One is cyclical, so you might make money and lose money. We've mitigated a lot of that because we outsourced a bunch of the manufacturing stuff. So we've taken the fixed cost down. So when it turns down, it's not too bad. And then the industry has mitigated a little bit for us because by going to new screen sizes in addition to TVs, you sort of get a little bit broader customer mix, which helps. And the third thing, we've come out with some new products. So, for instance, one of our new products we never had before, you know, we could do $150 million this year. So our portfolio of products has gotten broader. So given that the industry is a little less cyclical, given that we've taken some fixed costs out and we have a bigger footprint, I think it's actually become more attractive business.
Got it, got it. That's interesting. So let me just pause to see if there are any questions from the audience. If not, I'll just continue with my list of others. Please do.
We're not doing too much. The question was, are we doing anything in biotechnology? Not really. Over the years, we looked at things like, we have some metrology stuff, some sample handling type technology. We haven't seen too much there for a few reasons. One, our knowledge of that market's pretty limited. The scale of what we could do there is not too big. And, you know, if you get anything near the FDA, or it gets tricky, so it's doubtful we'll do anything. Thank you.
So, Bob, just on the competitive front, you guys have spoken about gaining share, like the focus being etch process control, but obviously there's been quite a bit of share movement in both those and other areas like deposition. I'm kind of curious on two fronts. One is, you know, obviously etch is a very big opportunity, which I completely agree. But in one, in like if I look at like dielectric even conductor etch, one of the guys you might end up competing with is TEL. Is there any... legal ramifications, given the fact that you looked into their books over the last year and a half, you kind of know how they're going to play. So how do you approach that subject from like a competitive standpoint now that you're two separate entities? And secondly, is the goal still to gain share without sacrificing profitability, or is it like one or the other?
Yeah, that's a good question. So most of the people in this room have probably looked at business plans as ventures or big companies for years. And if you look at business plans, they fundamentally, other than the stuff about team and everything, you got three business issues to look at. One is the market attractive? Two, does the company have disruptive products to win in that market? Three, do you have enough scale to make money? So if you go look at when we walked in the door a few years ago, at the cosmic level, we found solar an unattractive market and divested. We found semi and display to be more attractive than people thought. We thought service was under-realized. Within semi, we thought that the two or three markets that were most attractive that we were underrepresented were etch, which is a growing market, and we had lost some share, deposition, certain types of deposition, and also inspection, right? So we put money into products in etch and deposition, and we're getting those products out now and gaining share. Inspection, we put more money into field applications, not so much hardware. So that one's a little bit different time frame. We got early results, now we got to get the hardware. So in terms of, we found those to be attractive markets, and we still believe it. We're gaining share, and if you look at our operating profit improvement, although we get a lot of airtime about etch gross margins, our operating margins in etch from 2012 to 15 have arguably been the biggest company. Okay, flipped a loss to a significant profit. Gotcha. The other thing on etch is that it's got a very attractive aftermarket, spare parts and service business. You guys may not know the business, but think about
etch descriptor means you're etching away materials, metals or non-metals, and a thing that, like an acid, etches something away, eats itself, so you get a lot of spare parts, right? So it's a good service business, too. So we found those to be attractive businesses, and we still believe those are the good bets. We're in them. Is there a trade for gross or operating margins? Not really. If you look at inspection business, by its nature, it's a growth opportunity and attractive margins. Deposition's pretty good. Etch historically for Applied and historically for the industry has been lower gross margins, but we think we can definitely improve from where we are. And when we look at total life cycle profitability and operating margins, pretty attractive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then on the pricing standpoint, do you think, not just you guys, like the whole competitive environment, is everyone behaving rationally on pricing, or is there still where, like, I'm willing to cut price to get business away from somebody else? Is that mentality still there, or are people more rational in pricing given that it's a consolidated customer base and arguably consolidated, like, you know, equipment base too?
So we have a lot of discussions internally on all sorts of topics, and especially around strategic issues. So to solve a strategic issue or answer your question, you really have to segment the problems. You say, well, let's segment the market, segment the product, segment the problems, and solve those problems. So I'll segment your question, right? So is pricing very competitive, and are people competitively, aggressively pricing? Where would that happen? There are many places where it's very difficult to switch suppliers, either because you've been locked in as the supplier of record for years and your equipment is in the fab running for years, or your customer makes a whole pile of different chips for a whole pile of different customers, and switching one tool out that touches a lot of his customers, tricky to do. Historically, the easiest way to second source, the easiest place, was like DRAM chips. Because you fundamentally have to go to the chip and say, what kind of a tool does that chip make? So if you look at logic chip, they're so high performing, so critical, that switching tools can be counterproductive. So customers try and lock in long-term relationships and long-term contracts. If you go look at foundries, so many different chips are touched that you have to be careful, because tool-to-tool variation is a big deal. DRAM for years was easier, because if you go home and make your own DRAM chip, there's two parts of the chip. There's the cell where they store the data, And there's built-in redundancy there.
Right.
So if one of them fails, you've got a backup. And the periphery is logic, but it's old logic. So it's easier to switch vendors in DRAM. But even that's getting trickier now because the periphery is getting more recent
right.
logic. So this notion of just switching vendors in easily isn't that easy because we have to qualify for over a year before
right.
we get qualified. And once you're in production, it's a little tricky. So it isn't that many head-to-head competitions.
Gotcha.
You try and win on inflections. It's like a football team, right? I do analogies. So what you try and do is you get a hole in the offensive line, and then you go through the hole fast. So when you see an inflection, a hole in the offensive line, you go for it. So we see inflections in markets or technologies. We pour research dollars into products for that hole.
But, I mean, that's kind of like taking a page from the Variant playbook, right? That's kind of how you guys gain share
yeah.
at the 65-nanometer inflection.
You got to win on inflections.
Right. Got it. Yep.
Another question. Tokyo Electron has a tremendous
Well, Tokyo Electron, as in all the Japanese companies, they almost all sell in yen, and their cost structures are mostly in yen. So they can sell in lower prices in dollars and keep similar gross margin profiles and operating margin profiles. So that's an advantage for them. There's a few questions for all the Japanese companies. One, again, it's like how many markets are toss-ups for them to go after, because there's a lot of tool record decisions that are made over years, as I just said. So how many windows does a cheaper yen help you in, like any pricing decision? A moderate number. Their businesses they're very strong in the track business where they have like 85% share, and they compete against a Japanese company. In Etch, they compete against more Lam than us and also against some Japanese companies. So there aren't that many places where it's a big advantage. In some of the places, it's another Japanese company.
But do you think that actually the Japanese equipment guys are playing the pricing game with the FX being where it is? Because once you play that game, it's very tough to get your pricing back, right?
I think they price in yen. So if you look at Japanese companies, when the yen was strengthening, their prices were effectively in dollars going up. And sometimes customers mitigated that by entering into long-term agreements. Mm-hmm. So now when the yen's gotten weaker, some customers benefit, some had long-term agreements. So
gotcha.
Customers, when it was going up, some of them mitigated it. So it's kind of muted also.
And then, along the same path with what happened with Tokyo Electron, how do you revisit and how do you think about M&A from now onwards? Is it a function of once bitten, twice shy, or will you still be open to maybe more bolt-on acquisitions rather than like a transformative one that the one you guys tried?
Well, we're having a board meeting this Thursday, and at 10 a.m., anyone who wants to come and discuss it with us. But in all honesty, we're doing some thinking on that. There's sort of three criteria. One, we're not emotionally disturbed. Everybody, the last 3 weeks, I've seen a lot of investors say, Bob, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. The worst part of my 3 weeks is sitting on this stage, right? So here's the deal. There's three challenges on M&A. One, is it a good deal? Is it economically interesting? Two, is it a place we want to be? We see that market growing. We can add value, right? And the third one is, can you get through antitrust approval, right? So in our core markets, there are still some opportunities. Probably nothing as disruptive as Tokyo Electron because of the size of Tokyo Electron and the tax leverage was pretty significant.
Right.
But we're open-minded to things. It's just not a long list.
Got it. And then on the capital return side, you guys spoke about the buyback, $3 billion, maybe over a couple of years, maybe shorter than that. Is the priority still on the returns more buyback versus dividend, or would you consider like revisiting the dividend or trying to raise it at a certain cadence, or is it more, let's try to get the buyback done, let's try to improve the earnings power?
Yeah, good question. So we're on a three, I always talk in threes. People, I can only remember three things. We're kind of on a three-track tier, right? Let's say we could grow the revenue line at a higher than average ratio, and I think we will, Because look at our R&D bill. We put it into R&D 2.5 years ago, and it's coming out now. So I think we can grow the revenue above industry norms. I think grow the operating margins. We talked about that. We've done pretty well. We need to do better. And then the third one is grow cash returns to investors. So now that's up. So on the cash returns to investors, the first question is, how do I get cheap sources of cash and get it to investors? So the trick of the trade for every company in Silicon Valley pretty much is, you know, we ship a lot of technology overseas and we set up complex tax structures that we don't pay taxes until the cash comes home. Right. So how do you get the cash home and pay a dividend or a buyback? I'm starting to get a little more optimistic that we can get more cash home and not screw up the payment of taxes or the tax rate. So I think our cash availability is a little better than I thought a few weeks ago. The second thing is, how do we do that mix? We announced a $3 billion buyback. At first we said 3 years, then we said 2 years. I think we'll be more focused on the buyback at this point. We benchmarked, for whatever it's worth, if you look at our benchmark group, we looked at that for tech companies with a dividend, it's kind of like 2.1 to 2.5%. We're under that. We're sort of 1.8, 1.9. So I'd like to get into that benchmark group. We'll revisit it in February with the board, but our longer-term goal is to get into that benchmark group, but our first focus is the buyback.
Got it. So is there another way to think about it by saying, like, a certain percentage of your U.S. free cash flow is going to go into purchasing, or is it more just like, you know, these are decisions made where, like, let's do the $2 billion, $3 billion buyback first, then think about it?
I think the first priority is to make significant headway on the buyback. I think we're further behind on that because we had a $3 billion buyback authorized, another one, prior to the merger, and we suspended it with 1.65 to go. So we're a little bit further behind on that. So I'd like to take a bite out of that and then revisit the dividend. I'd also like line of sight a little bit to the cash flow coming home from overseas because the dividend is very fixed cost.
Right,
whereas the buyback's a little opportunistic. So I don't want to overweight that too soon.
Got it. Simon?
Yeah, thank you very much. Just I want to ask the long-term aspect of the sort of the equipment demand because when I look at the memory chip makers, they are really focusing on the 3D NAND and also the DRAM industry obviously are already well consolidated. So, you know, the new greenfield, the fab construction pretty much limited. All the chip makers, DRAM chip makers, they are focusing on the existing capacity upgrade rather than adding the more wafer capacity. And also when I look at the FinFET technology these days, you know, Samsung and TSMC, they are saying they want to use already existing CVD equipment for the, their, you know, the 14 node or 10 node. So based upon this, what would be the, your business opportunities for the top line growth or revenue enhancement if the new equipment demand becomes weaker and weaker? Thank you.
Sure. So I think everyone heard the question. So conceptually, you should think about two things for construct. How are they going to make computer chips? And the second construct is we sell surface area. So let me do one at a time. So for years, every computer chip, logic, foundry, DRAM, and NAND, they made it smaller. And the rule for 30 years is if you make it smaller, it's better, faster, cheaper. The primary enabling technology to make it smaller was probably lithography, right? Because if you can't make the mask, the image, the blueprint, whatever you want to call it, you can't make the device. So making it smaller doesn't work so well anymore because the performance of it has a problem, particularly in mobile devices. So I'll give you an example. If you go to 2D NAND, one cell is like 8 electrons. 8 electrons is a storage of data. It's not super reliable, plus it's technically challenging and costly, right? So just going smaller in 2D is getting tough. So they're going to two changes. They're going in a third dimension, and they're changing the materials. So they're changing the structures in the materials. So the way to make the computer chips now is switching from just smaller to new structures and materials. So in 3D, they're going to deposit and etch 32 layers, then 48, then 68. But the feature size is bigger. It's 40, 50 nanometer lines versus 10 nanometer lines. So the smaller part is a lot easier, but the deposition and etch is harder. So that swings to companies like ourselves, Lam, and Tel, right? In logic and foundry, they're going like a dorsal fin on a fish, and they're getting more surface area, it's contacting. Why? Because you get more surface area, and one of the big problems they have is your phone leaks. If you have less surface area, you get a lot of resistance and contacting, and it doesn't perform, and the battery dies, right? So more surface area by going to a third dimension is what they're doing. So the first concept I said is the chips are changing, whereby just in the two-dimensional shrink doesn't work anymore. You've got to go to a third dimension or change the materials. That plays very well for companies like Applied, Tokyo Electron, Lam, because we're about deposition and etch and surface area, right? So the other thing I'll touch on is surface area. It's how many wafers, which is easy for you to understand, but the number of steps is going up, more layers and more steps, okay? So the capital is going to be pretty good, actually, and it's going to be a little bit more weighted towards companies like us. So I think that line of sight the next number of years is pretty good, actually, because they're changing how they make the devices, and surface area is pretty good in terms of not just wafers, but layers. Yeah, I think that's true. I think the next number of years is pretty good for us, less cyclical, more predictable. And I think our customers are behaving like mature industrialists, where they can manage their budget more. So if you go to a company like Samsung, who makes DRAM, NAND, and foundry devices, they opportunistically put their capital into the market that looks good. You know, a couple of years ago, they went into the first generation 3D NAND before other people. Then they kind of did some DRAM spending. Now the question is they go back to NAND or foundry. So they're managing a dollar value portfolio of CapEx, but they have different choices. The foundries have a portfolio of different customers. So their ability to manage a sustainable capital X budget at pretty high levels is better. It's not as lumpy. It's not one product, one company.
So Bob, to that point, you kind of touched upon two things. One is earlier you said how it's difficult to second source in a logic, but relatively easier in DRAM. But if you look at someone like Samsung, who has like fungible capacity between DRAM, NAND, and arguably logic too, is it fair to assume that the tools that they buy, let's say they buy a specific etcher or a depth tool from you, it is pretty much the same they use for DRAM, NAND, and the LSI fab, so they can move around capacity easily?
Yeah, that's a good question too. There's three levels of that question, really. One is, I've said historically it's been easy to reuse DRAM. But remember what I said to you earlier, DRAM's got two parts, the cell, which is pretty easy, it's got redundancy, so if you fail one, you're okay. But the periphery is logic. It's just Intel logic from three nodes ago or something, right? So now they're getting down to Intel logic of three nodes ago. I don't know what they're at, 45 or something. That's getting tough. So the ability to switch tools even within DRAM, particularly as you're doing patterning on the periphery, that's not as fungible as it used to be. So the DRAM thing's not quite as easy as it was 8 years ago, say, right? The second thing is moving equipment between fabs, between NAND, DRAM, and foundry, for instance. Yes, but the thing is, what's the cost of doing it, and how long do you think you'll be underutilized capacity? So what they've done is they could do that if they think they're really going to be down for a year or two, but they try and limit the amount of inefficient utilization. So what they do is instead of doing a big ballroom fab, they use FOUPs, and they buy equipment in somewhat smaller bunches so they don't make a big step function in capacity. And then they proactively change their capital budget more than really redeploying the tools, because you got to get all the tool set lined up and physical buildings. So they do it, but I think it's more if they're underutilized for a year or so.
Got it.
And if you look at utilization now, it's running pretty high, actually.
Mm-hmm. Hi, just a quick question on your point about being, you know, the process nodes that have gotten semiconductor prices faster, smaller, cheaper, was always litho-intensive. Now it's going to be more etch-intensive. You know, ASML had a press release saying that a big North American customer was going to, you know, order 15 new EUV tools. Does that change the dynamics that you have talked about. And I can't remember ever when Intel has ever allowed a supplier to make those kind of comment. So does that change, does that announcement change your thesis around now the other guys will spend more money, the logic guys will spend more on litho as opposed to more etch and depo?
Well, I'm not an EUV expert, so I'll wander around erroneously, right? I think EUV is making progress, but most people believe it's 7 nanometers, several layers. That was a positive note by Intel, but still got a ways to go, and Intel has multiple levels to the relationship, too. So I think they're making progress. I think it's good progress. I don't think it's a landmark. I don't think it's black and white. Right? I think it's a work in progress.
So it doesn't change your thesis around litho?
Not for a while.
Not for a while. Got it. Thanks.
So, Bob, let me ask this question. I'm sure you've gotten this a bunch of times. You know, one of the topics that comes up is, you know, China's new commitment to semiconductors. You know, when I talk to investors, many of them seem very excited about the potential of China investing in the next five-year plan into semis. When I talk to industry folks, they're like, oh, I've seen this 20 years ago. You know, it's nothing new. They try for a few times, doesn't work out. You know, so is it different this time around, you think, or is it more of the same where they try to put in some money, maybe you see a bunch of service providers come up, maybe something on the fabless side, but nothing truly on the equipment or the fab side?
Well, this is just my opinion. Right now, we're not seeing much on the ground. My opinion is there's not much on the ground right now. My opinion is they'll focus more on semi-devices than equipment, because equipment, actually, you need a more robust supply chain than you do for devices, because devices, you have companies like us that are pretty good supporters, right? So I think their focus will probably be on devices first. My guess is memory is a little easier, DRAM, stuff like that. That's my guess,
right.
Just because that's the usual game plan people follow. My guess, they're serious. I think they have various national reasons to pursue it. So I think they're probably serious. The rate of change, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the strategic issues worth thinking about.
Got it, got it. And then maybe like a final question from my end in the interest of time. On the equipment side, you know, obviously the competition for you guys is mostly, you know, in the U.S., maybe a little bit in Europe, a little bit in Japan. The other topic that comes up is like Korea, where, like, you know, you do have a couple of smaller players, arguably subsidized by Samsung, but at the same time, competing in the not-so-high-tech side, but more on, like, clean, like, you know, ALD also, for example. So I'm kind of curious how that is trending, and is that still a challenge, especially in Korea, and do you think those players are more topical to Korea, and you don't expect them to, like, expand overseas?
The companies in Korea have become more capable. I respect them. They've had a fair amount of support by the Korean government and the Korean customers.
Right.
They tend to tackle more the commodity films and commodity processes. They tend to tackle things mostly in Korea because of support.
Right.
I think that's kind of the model, probably for the while.
Okay, got it. All right, with that, we're out of time, and thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you for inviting me to the ballroom. Thank you.
Thank you. Right.